Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. And we begin on the front page with the cover story headline. Now, it's on him. Following adversity, CEO Nate Stasko is using all his skills to steer Novon on a path to success. That's the headline on the front page. The article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Crunch Time. Novon remains confident in its drugs, but the company needs money to move its pipeline. And this article is written by Jennifer Henderson. January 27th. Was a day Novon executives, its shareholders, and its employees wish had never happened. Only 4 months earlier, the company had started selling shares to the public, and in the process raised $52 million. The company, which is developing an acne drug, watched its stock double in a short few weeks and market capitalization reach roughly $500 million. Then came that chilly Friday in January. CEO Nate Stasko and his management team were handed results of the Phase 3 trials for the acne drug, and it was not what they were hoping to see. And neither were the shareholders. In one day, Novon lost 75% of its value, and within hours, just like what happens with every company that experiences an eye-opening stock drop, lawsuits came flying from groups claiming to represent Novon shareholders. To Stasko, the reaction to the Phase 3 results was not surprising. The public markets and the investors obviously responded with the future of that program in question, and we obviously had a tremendous amount of volatility in our share price and market cap, Stasko says. But our conviction in the asset, it never lost any of its efficacy. Stasko may be right about the drug's efficacy, but the company's runway has now shortened dramatically, with about $34 million in its kitty, and a burn rate of $13 million plus every quarter, Novon needs money to continue on its most promising research and develop the pipeline for other drugs. And the options are limited, especially with the stock trading at $5.45 per share and the possibility of a secondary offering presenting significant dilution. It was a setback for all the other programs and diseases that we have the ability to treat, Stasko says. The biggest sense of loss for me was it was going to put on hold temporarily the growth of our platform for a number of other skin diseases. Stasko adds, the benefit for stockholders of getting the first drug approved from our platform greenlights everything else. And that's the message that needs to not only resonate with Wall Street, but potential licensing partners that can fund Novon's progress. Without a doubt, Novon's fate matters to the Triangle. Some of the area's most notable businessmen, such as Cree co-founder Neil Hunter, former GlaxoSmithKline U.S. head Robert Ingram, and SAS founder James Goodnight, have ties to the company, either by providing the management team direction or investing in the company. The Morrisville company that recently doubled its space near a building in Research Triangle Park was one of the most prominent life sciences IPOs in the nation last year, casting a positive light on the area, its research, and the Triangle's entrepreneurial ecosystem. An early setback. The acne drug is only one of several in the pipeline for Novon, but the impact of its lead candidate's mixed results rippled across the company. Still, Novon remains confident in its acne product. Shortly after the not-so-promising results were announced, Novon reported an updated development timeline for the drug that included moving it forward in the approval process with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Novon is planning for a pre-submission meeting with the FDA in the third quarter of 2017, and as a result, possibly a new drug application submission in the first quarter of next year. The announcement and timeline came after the company said that it conducted an in-depth examination of the data sets and engaged consultants in biostatistics and regulatory affairs. After weeks of work and a number of third-party consultants, some of which are still working on behalf of the company, top regulatory experts, top statistical experts in the field, we believe that the two trials constitute a fillable new drug application, Stasko says. But there are clear concerns ahead. Novon could face a crunch when it comes to the lifeblood of all startups, cash. The company is pursuing a number of financing avenues right now, traditional equity-based, non-dilutive, and any forms of growth capital in between, Stasko says. Novon also faces the hurdle of getting FDA approval for the acne product after the drug met all three co-primary endpoints, or outcomes used for evaluation, in one trial, but only one of three in another. David Nierengarten, a research analyst at Wedbush Securities, says that simply having one of two successful phase three studies made any route to approval more complicated when it comes to SB204. I still think they would need to do an additional phase three study, he says. Traditionally, other studies have been approved on two phase three studies in acne. I do think they're going to need a little more to get it approved. Deep connection to local executives. Like many other life sciences companies in the Triangle, Novon grew out of academia. The company has its roots on UNC Chapel Hill's campus in the lab of Professor of Chemistry Mark Schoenfisch. Stasko, a graduate student at the time, and Schoenfisch co-founded Novon in 2006. From the beginning, Novon's unique approach to nitric oxide lured big-name investors and board members. The technology involves turning nitric oxide into a druggable form, according to Stasko. We had the vision to marry nitric oxide in chemistry with macromolecular drug delivery, he says. Our five indications in our pipeline affect over 150 million Americans and 1.5 billion individuals globally, Stasko says. That's a massive reach with just one technology platform. The Triangle has seen this before, with Quintiles, now Quintiles IMS, growing out of UNC Chapel Hill, and SAS tracing its roots to Goodnight's time at NC State University. Well-known Triangle investors jumped in with Novon. Hunter is Novon's founding investor. Along with Ireland's Malin Life Sciences Holdings, they are Novon's largest shareholders with 9.7% and 16.4% stakes, respectively, in the company. Prior to the company's IPO, Ingram took over as chairman of Novon's board from Hunter. In October of last year, optimistic Novon moved into a new 51,000-square-foot office and lab space at 4105 Hobson Road in Morrisville from its previous two-suite home about half the size at 4222 Emperor Boulevard in Durham. The new space has the 37-year-old Stasko and all of his employees under one roof when it comes to running the labs and the operations of Novon. The company currently employs about 60 people. Betting on the pipeline. The enthusiastic start for Novon even sparked spin-offs. Hunter now chairs the board of NoBio, a holding company for Novon's non-dermatology assets that were spun off prior to the company's IPO. NoBio's respiratory business, Novoclem, which is initially focusing on cystic fibrosis, and light therapy business, PhotonMD, are among the most advanced assets thus far, both currently working toward commercialization. The real hook for Hunter was to be able to kill bacteria without the development of resistance, Stasko says. That was important in dermatology, but it's extremely important in the go-forward for nitric oxide, particularly in the respiratory disease area. The assets for Novon and NoBio all have the same nitric oxide roots. Hunter quips that he's currently eyeing retirement at age 90. In the meantime, he's enthused about saving people's lives through nitric oxide, which will be keeping him busy. Typically, in my past startups, because of partners, once we hit financial goals, I'd feel compelled by agreement or otherwise to take an exit, says Hunter of NoBio. He says, I'm very interested in going much longer on some of these companies rather than looking for an early exit. Hunter notes Vertex Pharmaceuticals' roughly $25 billion market capitalization. Operating in the same space, Novoclem is looking to crack. Vertex has drugs approved for the treatment of cystic fibrosis. Of Novon, Hunter says He loves developing and starting companies in North Carolina. There's nothing like a homegrown corporate headquarters, he says. Growing its arsenal. Since the IPO, Novant has added big names to its development arsenal. In March, former Quintiles executive Paula Brown Stafford, one of the contract research organization's early employees, joined Novant as its development officer. The company said a particular area of focus for Stafford would be upcoming interactions with the FDA as it relates to the treatment of acne. In addition, Stafford said in an email, I will be further evolving the internal clinical capabilities and external partnerships to support Novant's robust pipeline. Stasco says Novant is also building out its team ahead of pursuing additional non-dilutive financing opportunities in the form of global partnerships. In April, Novant announced an 8-member dermatology advisory council led by Dr. Lawrence Eichenfield, chief of pediatric and adolescent dermatology at Rady Children's Hospital, San Diego. Looking ahead. Compared to that rough day in January, April 12 was a much better day for Novant. The company announced positive Phase 2 results for a product candidate that treats fungal infections of the skin and nails and saw shares climb more than 40% as a result before the share prices slid back down again. We were encouraged by the new data, says Wedbush's Naren Garten. The company's technology has value in multiple indications. The challenge, he says, is it's still a little on the early side in other indications. Typically, investors hold back assigning a lot of value in terms of dermatology indications until later stage data comes back, adds Naren Garten. Nevertheless, having a diversified product portfolio certainly helps. As for the acne drug, Naren Garten believes Novant likely will be required to do another Phase 3 when it comes to moving it through the FDA process. There is a chance that the FDA is more lenient, but I think it is a low chance, he says. Phase 3 trials are expensive, meaning the company would have to spend millions more. The major challenge for them is finding sufficient and hopefully not too expensive capital to fund development, Naren Garten says. I do think there is a platform of value here with multiple dermatology indications. Their challenge is financing in the near term. Stasco notes financing as a primary challenge facing Novant moving forward. In January, Novant announced an exclusive licensing agreement with Japan's Sato Pharmaceutical that could be worth more than $43 million. Novant said it would receive an initial payment of approximately $11 million for the development and commercialization of Novant's treatment of acne. Stasco says he doesn't see the total development expense for SB204, the acne drug, exceeding $100 million. Across the company's pipeline, he puts Phase 2 costs in the $2 million to $10 million range and Phase 3 costs in the $9 million to $40 million range. As of December 31, Novant had cash and equivalents of $34.6 million, not including the upfront payment from Sato, according to the company. Novant reported a net loss of $59.7 million in 2016, up from a net loss of $28.1 million the prior year. In the company's March announcement of its fourth quarter and full year results, Novant stated that its research and development expenses increased from $16.6 million in 2015 to $46.5 million in 2016, due primarily to increased development and personnel costs related to Phase 3 and Phase 2 studies. We don't run studies that we don't believe have a high level of probability. We're not just flying blind, Stasco says. He also points to the fact that the company has efficiently and successfully executed 3 Phase 2 programs and remains committed to moving its acne drug toward commercialization. We're working every day here at Novant to get that drug toward NDA submission in Q1 of 2018. That's a top priority for us, he says. Even though the clinical work is put on pause for right now, the chemistry, the manufacturing, the non-clinical, the regulatory, all the other pieces of the new drug application are still being built and assembled. Wall Street is watching very closely. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The first headline, Bow Ties Honor Raleigh Doctor Battling Leukemia. About 140 Raleigh area business, civic, and community leaders returned on April 21 from the Greater Raleigh Chamber of Commerce's annual inner city visit to Boston, loaded with new ideas and perspectives on topics that varied from education to economic development. One usual attendee on these annual visits, however, was missing. Dr. David Zass, CEO of Duke Raleigh Hospital, is undergoing treatment for leukemia and had to stay home this year. So attendees Matt Smith and Alicia Barfield, with the blessings of Inner City Visit Task Force Chair Jimmy Goodman, organized a tribute for Zass with the men all wearing bow ties, one of Zass's trademarks, and sent him a video encouraging him to kick cancer's Zass. David is a friend to our entire community, and we wanted him to know that he is not alone in his fight, Smith says. Growth in robots means revenue and more hiring for Apex firm. The booming interest in robots is meaning jobs for people in Apex. ATI Industrial Automation is expanding again, this time breaking ground April 21 on the largest expansion in its history. The driver is the robotics industry is really on fire, CEO Bob Little tells Biz. It has gotten a lot of interest by manufacturers across the world. ATI Industrial Automation now has 300 employees and expects to hit $70 million in revenue this year, up from $30 million in 2012 and $15 million in 2007. Right now, our biggest problem is we want to hire another 40 to 50 employees, Little says. I don't have the room now. But the demand is there. Little says a key product for ATI is something that goes on the end of a robot and allows a robot to change tools. Also, Little says, one of the pieces of equipment we build is the ability for the robot to feel. That is, the robot can touch something and feel how hard you are touching it. Little says the challenge is to make the robots more effective and less expensive, but he said that has been happening, which is why the space is growing. Little says ATI now does half its business in the United States and the other half is international. Especially booming is the China market. Robots in China are the fastest growing market in the world because the cost of the robotics is going down, he says. Going strong at 92, this woman is a real jewel. Anne Bailey, who grew up in an orphanage and drove her business to success after the sudden loss of her husband, brought the crowd to its feet when she spoke April 21 at Triangle Business Journal's Women in Business Awards. Bailey, 92, worked side by side with her husband Clyde to open Bailey's Fine Jewelry in Rocky Mount in 1948. But he died of a heart attack in August 1963, and Bailey told a crowd of hundreds at the Raleigh Marriott Crabtree Valley that her competitors were sure that Bailey's, in the hands of a woman, wouldn't last 2 years. But, she said as she held out a pointed finger, never underestimate a hard-working woman. The crowd roared in approval and responded with a standing ovation. Bailey's now has 4 locations, hundreds of employees, and, she says proudly, is going as strong as ever. Hey, Charlotte, you might want to try our airport. Attention flyers in Charlotte and the Triad, Raleigh-Durham International Airport may be worth your drive. Data from the U.S. Department of Transportation show RDU averaged the cheapest domestic fares in 2016 among North Carolina's major airports, with average domestic fares of $354.87. The airport tops both Charlotte Douglas International, $415.91, and Greensboro's Piedmont Triad International Airport, $437.87. Economist Mike Walden at NC State University cautions that average airfares across all domestic flights can differ based on the specific destinations. That said, RDU should certainly advertise its relatively low fares, he says. The fare difference between Piedmont Triad and RDU could motivate Triad travelers who don't mind the drive and who would not incur the additional parking costs at RDU to make the trip. He predicts the prices would mainly lure leisure flyers, likely not business travelers. ESPN woes will have an impact on North Carolina. The job cuts ESPN began April 26 are expected to have an impact on North Carolina. ESPN, based in Bristol, Connecticut, has a major presence in Charlotte, home of its ESPNU and SCC network operations, and about 200 employees in the city. The ESPNU studios are expected to move to Bristol. The sports titan has been slammed as viewers cut the ties to cable and the rights to sporting events to continue to rise, and that led to significant cuts by ESPN, which is owned by Disney. The president of ESPN, tasked with overseeing the cuts and trying to turn around the network, is John Skipper, who graduated from UNC Chapel Hill in 1978. And finally, we have a section called He Said It. The quote, "I like that Beatles song." That's from Jeff Benson, president of the Dilwig Companies, on his decision to call his company's new funding entity TDC Blackbird LLC. The $12.75 million fund was created to support the Durham company's recent acquisition of two office buildings, the Sarasota City Center in Sarasota, Florida, and the 23-story First Citizens Bank Plaza Tower in Charlotte. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate and Retail page written by Amanda Hoyle. The main headline, Downtown Raleigh saw more than $205 million in private projects in 2016. Private developers in downtown Raleigh delivered more than $205.3 million in new building projects in 2016, and much more is ahead. According to the newly released State of Downtown Raleigh 2017 report, there's at least another $1.2 billion in both public and private investment that is planned or under construction over the next 3 to 4 years. At the annual event on April 25, the Downtown Raleigh Alliance honored 9 new building and major renovation projects completed in 2016 with its imprint awards, including the Edison Lofts, the $52 million construction of the 223-unit, 6-story apartment building on East Davy Street, the Gramercy, the $41 million, 7-story building on Glenwood Avenue with 203 apartment units and 7,500 square feet of retail anchored by Glenwood South Pharmacy and Market, Elon City Center, an estimated $38 million, 5-story apartment building with 213 units on North Wilmington Street, Link Apartments, Glenwood South, the $36.5 million, 204-unit apartment building on Northwest Street, Blount Street Commons, the $13.1 million new townhouse project south of P Street, 227 Fayetteville Street, a $9 million renovation of the 126,000-square-foot office building, Christ Church Addition, a $7.1 million renovation and expansion of the historic Christ Church campus on Edenton Street, Northwest Street Development, the $5.4 million renovation of a former lighting retail building and warehouse property into new office spaces and a bar, and the Dr. Pepper Warehouse, a $3.2 million renovation of a former warehouse into new office space on South Dawson Street. DRA's annual report also showed food and beverage sales topped $200 million in 2016, up from about $175 million in 2015. Average asking rent for Class A apartment units downtown is down 3% to $1,425 per month, compared to early 2016, primarily due to the increase in new unit supply. Another 564 apartment units were under construction in the downtown district as of late March. Growth in tourism in downtown Raleigh is also up 36% since 2007, but those growth numbers have mostly stagnated at about 3.2 million visitors per year since 2012. The new Residence Inn downtown Raleigh with 175 new hotel rooms is expected to open in July, and DRA is tracking five more planned hotel projects that could add an additional 900 rooms. New plans for Wegmans Cary Gateway project. Wegmans retail, restaurants, hotel, office, and luxury multifamily. It's all there in the new site plans for the Eastern Cary Gateway project that a South Carolina development firm submitted to the town on April 24. Columbia Development has released new drawings and site plans for its proposed 92-acre mixed-use building project at Carytown Boulevard and Interstate 40 in Cary that has been in various planning stages for nearly 2 years. The renderings show a mix of 6- and 8-story office and hotel buildings, a cluster of retail and restaurant buildings with second and third floor office spaces, luxury apartments, and parking decks that all total about 2 million square feet of new commercial and residential development. Ink Research doesn't let rain delay groundbreaking in Mooresville. The crowd with umbrellas in hand gathered at the site of the new Ink Research headquarters building in Mooresville on April 24. And when the air horn blew, the bulldozer and dumpster cranked their engines and shifted gears. As the equipment rolled away, a sign was unshielded showing the new rendering and street sign for Ink Way, marking the start of a new era for the Raleigh-based company. Perimeter 5, the future home to Ink Research, is slated to be a 6-story, 214,450-square-foot Class A office building that will also be an anchor for a cluster of new building projects that Perimeter Park co-owner and developer Trinity Capital Advisors wants to build in the future. Construction is expected to be complete by summer 2018. Happy and Hale to expand with new location at North Hills. The owners of Happy and Hale, a health food restaurant that started with a trike in downtown Raleigh in 2013, is among the first new retail tenants to sign up at the Park Central apartment and retail building scheduled to open in late summer at North Hills. The new Happy and Hale will be facing Six Forks Road and accessible from a new frontage road extension leading to the new Allscripts-anchored Midtown Plaza office building. Cycle Bar will also be opening one of its stadium-style cycle fitness studios, and sources say negotiations are also underway with another smaller format fitness studio and a hot yoga studio owner at Park Central. YMCA opening new branch in downtown Raleigh. The YMCA of the Triangle has inked a new lease deal to open a branch in about 26,000 square feet on the lower levels of the recently renovated 227 Fayetteville office building in downtown Raleigh. Ed Kulik, principal at LRC Properties that owns the building, says the YMCA is a good match for the building's group of tenants, which includes the Raleigh office of Ratio Architects, which will be designing the space for the YMCA, Vital Source, Cohera Medical, and Indie Week. The YMCA will have full visibility from both Fayetteville and Wilmington streets. And finally, in a section called The Deal Wire, IGT Global Solutions Corporation has leased 10,987 square feet at Research Triangle Industrial Center in Mooresville, taking the property to 100% occupied. Ann Stewart Patterson and Butch Miller of CBRE Raleigh represented the building owner, Peter Lawrence Companies, in the lease transaction. Security consulting firm Protus 3 is relocating and expanding in late May into 5,475 square feet at 5540 Centerview Drive in Raleigh. In addition, NextStaff of Raleigh has leased 1,500 square feet in the same building, and Volkert will expand into another 1,200 square feet. Street Jones and Boo Hargrove of Rich Commercial Realty represented Protus 3 in the lease negotiations, and Kaylor Walker and John Michaels of Lincoln Harris represented the landlord. Michaels also represented NextStaff in its deal. Plates Gym and Barbell has leased 2,260 square feet at Roseville Commons in Roseville with plans to open a new training facility. Wendy Neighbors of Barrett Neighbors Commercial represented the tenant, and Daniel Herring of NAI Carolantic Realty represented the landlord in the deal. And now we turn to the On Tech and Transportation page, written by Lauren Onasorge. The main headline: Moving Dirt, Raising Millions, Part of Expanding Runway. A month after approving the airport's 2017 to 2018 budget, the Raleigh-Durham International Airport Authority Board of Directors is pushing forward with plans to replace its longest runway, which hosts both of RDU's transatlantic flights. It's an intense project and one that requires a multitude of contractors, even just to plan the replacement of the 10,000-foot runway. The landscape proposed for the $280 million runway replacement project has a major drop-off. Crews will need to fill it with dirt. Ron Jewett, Vice President of Facility Asset Management at RDU, estimates nearly 3.5 million to 4 million yards of earth will be needed. There are a lot of things that ride on how packable the soil is, he told the Airport Authority Board during its April meeting. It's a big number. But moving the earth could serve a double benefit down the line should the airport want to develop the acreage where they're moving the dirt from, says Chief Operating Officer Bill Sandifer. Not replacing the runway isn't an option, as the 30-year-old surface is nearing the end of its life. Jewett says estimates have the pavement degrading a strapping amount of between 3 and 5 points each year. RDU has agreed to a $1.5 million agreement with CH2M for preliminary design services. Designs are just one aspect. The top priority, as RDU Airport Authority CEO Mike Landguth has said repeatedly, is paying for the overhaul. And RDU is banking on support from the feds. The Federal Aviation Administration has a program that can assist in funding large-scale projects at airports up to 75% of the cost. The first step in getting the cash is approving a master plan. The airport has submitted that paperwork, Sandifer says. They've got it in their hands. They're working through that process. Anybody's guess how long that takes, he says, adding that he's hoping for a 4 or 5 month time frame. RDU is teaming up with consultants, Recondo and Associates, and Unison to help prepare the required documents at a combined expense of about $236,000. The combined estimate actually came in about $50,000 below an independent review estimate, according to the airport. And next to this article, there's a section called By the Numbers. Delta leads the way as RDU traffic continues to soar in the month of March. Traffic at Raleigh-Durham International Airport continues to increase. A total of 470,764 passengers boarded at RDU in March, bringing the total for the first 3 months of 2017 to more than $1.2 million. That's a 6.5% increase from the same time period last year, according to numbers released by the RDU Airport Authority. Airlines ranked in terms of RDU passengers boarded in March: Delta Airlines, 149,695. American Airlines, 125,040. Southwest Airlines, 94,323. United Airlines, 61,230. JetBlue, 20,627. Frontier, 6,387. Allegiant Air, 5,310. Alaska Airlines, 4,624. And Air Canada, 2,967. And a section now on this page called He Said It, the quote, "As the world continues to get smaller because of digital technology, transportation becomes more important, and really, the customer experience becomes more important." And that's from Farad Ali, new chairman of the Raleigh-Durham International Airport Authority. New Red Hat CFO calls role dream job. Eric Shander, the new chief financial officer of Raleigh-based Red Hat, wants to put a touch of Big Blue into Red Hat Tower. Shander, a former longtime IBM executive, expects to face some unique challenges in his new role, which he calls his dream job. "We just put up 60 straight quarters of revenue growth, and that certainly presents different opportunities to solve different problems," he says. "It's a 180-degree pivot from IBM," he notes, "where its finance team is dealing with yet another quarter of year-over-year revenue decline. My objective is not, and I emphasize, is not to make Red Hat like IBM," he says. "But experiences he has gleaned from his time at Big Blue will definitely help the company scale," he says. "It's about adopting the right processes and approaches that will work in our culture." When he first came to Red Hat 2 years ago, it took the company 5 days to close the accounting book. Today, it's 2, and that means activities that used to pile up at the end of the term can be spread out, all by changing the process. "I've really taken the approach that there's opportunities and ways for us to work smarter," he says. He compares his management style to that of former longtime Red Hat CFO Charlie Peters. "You have to connect with the teams," he says. Car wash app Spiffy weighs next move. As Spiffy, a research Triangle Park company with an app to bring a car wash directly to you, raises cash, conversations are happening about where it should expand next. That's according to co-founder Scott Wingo, speaking shortly after a Spiffy securities disclosure revealed that what was originally a $5 million funder had swelled to $7.5 million in new financing. The app currently connects to customers in Raleigh, Charlotte, Atlanta, and Los Angeles. Wingo says its next debut is the subject of a lot of debate. While Spiffy will deploy car washes anywhere, its primary use is at the office. Its crews are frequently dispatched to the Cisco campus, for example, to tend to cars of people while they're at work. So it's likely that the next expansion city will have a large professional population, he said. And now we turn to the On Life Sciences page, written by Jennifer Henderson. The first headline carries Avance Health sued over internet ads. Travel vaccines company Passport Health, which is based in Scottsdale, Arizona, and has franchises in North Carolina, has filed a new trademark infringement lawsuit against Cary-based Avance Health System over search engine advertisements. The lawsuit follows one that was dismissed in 2013. Passport alleges in a suit filed in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina that Avance has been purchasing search engine advertisements and/or keywords for terms including Passport Health through internet search engines such as Microsoft's Bing, which infringes upon its trademarks. Upon information and belief, Avance pays to use Passport Health as a search term as part of its attempt to harvest for its own benefit the goodwill that Passport has built up, Passport claims. Avance intentionally targets customers who are interested in purchasing products and services from Passport, and using Passport's own trademark works to divert those customers instead to Avance's website, they say. In 2013, Passport claimed Avance was using Passport trademarks in search engine advertisements. The lawsuit was dismissed as a result of a settlement in which Avance agreed to stop using Passport trademarks at that time and in the future, Passport alleges in its current complaint. Passport calls its resurrected claims against Avance identical misconduct in the complaint. The company further alleges that Passport has been deprived of certain sales and profits and has the potential to be mistakenly seen as endorsing Avance products and services. It states that it is seeking to stop Avance from its alleged trademark infringement and recover damages. In response, Levi Boyd, Director of Finance and Business Development for Avance, said in a statement, "Avance respects the intellectual property rights of others and maintains that it has not done anything to violate any such rights in this situation. We remain hopeful that we can reach an appropriate resolution." Passport would not comment on the litigation. Durham's Veritas Collaborative promotes Skocic to COO role. Amid continued expansion, Durham's Veritas Collaborative, which specializes in the treatment of eating disorders, has tapped a new chief operating officer. Cindy Skocic, who has served as chief financial officer of the organization for about 4 years, has been appointed COO, effective April 3. It is a new position for Veritas, according to Stacy McIntyre, founder, president, and CEO of Veritas. "Over the course of the last 14 months, we've grown from one hospital to a hospital system," says McIntyre. Veritas currently has two facilities in Durham, one in Richmond, Virginia, and one in Atlanta. Skocic's appointment to the COO position will allow Veritas to build the necessary infrastructure and achieve the operational maturity to support ongoing growth within the organization, says McIntyre. Before joining Veritas, Skocic held positions of CFO and acting CEO of Castle Worldwide, as well as CFO of Southern Assisted Living, according to Veritas. The organization is currently in the process of recruiting for its CFO position as a result of Skocic's appointments, as McIntyre. Veritas has continued on a growth trajectory as of late, recently opening its first adult hospital in Durham, as well as a facility in Atlanta that offers outpatient services. The adult facility in Durham has 18 beds and has been staying around full capacity, says McIntyre, noting that it currently employs 81 people with more to be added. The Atlanta facility has 7 employees and has had 276 appointments since its opening February 1, she says. Company-wide, Veritas employs upward of 350 people. As for further expansion, Veritas is very much on the investigative process to make decisions about our next growth, McIntyre says. Chapel Hill Clinical Data Firm partners with Allergan. On the heels of two collaborations with Bristol-Myers Squibb that were announced in November, Chapel Hill-based clinical data company Target Pharma Solutions has partnered with pharmaceutical giant Allergan. Allergan will collaborate with the company on its Target NASH study, focused on patients with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease or non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. The study has currently enrolled upward of 1,000 patients, according to Target Pharma Solutions CEO Meg Powell, and will enroll 15,000 patients. It is planned to last 5 years, but could extend longer, she says. Powell notes that Target Pharma Solutions sees the potential for more partnerships in all of its therapeutic areas. Such partnerships continue to reinforce bringing people together around a common data set, she says. Target Pharma Solutions completed its Series A round last year, raising $2 million, according to the company. Rex Health Ventures was the lead investor, Powell previously said. Sweden's Recipharm expands RTP operation. Sweden's Recipharm, a global contract development and manufacturing organization, is continuing to grow its local operations after a Research Triangle Park-based acquisition last year. Recipharm has opened a $750,000 manufacturing practice suite at its existing space at Keystone Technology Park in Morrisville, according to the company. The suite will produce clinical trial materials, including metered dose inhalers and topical products like gels and creams. "The suite is one natural step that we have taken here to expand the site," says Ann Floden, general manager and VP of Recipharm's facility in RTP. Work on the suite began last year. Durham's Markin opening call center in Philadelphia. Durham-based Markin, which specializes in supply chain solutions for the life sciences industry, has opened a new call center in Philadelphia that will serve patients who are enrolled in clinical trials, according to the company. The company's patient interaction center comes as Markin acquired last year by UPS, continues to expand globally and at its Durham headquarters. This call center is a natural progression to providing patients continued opportunities to be active participants in scheduling their own pickups during the clinical trial, helping them to live as normal of a life as possible, a Marken spokeswoman said. And finally, we have a section called He Said It. The quote, "This is a big step for us and one that we've been working on and excited about for over a year. The idea here is that analytics can be used to identify organizational challenges, and then you can apply training to change behavior to improve your results on those challenges." And that's from Jim Triandaflu, CEO of Cary-based online training company Relias Learning, on the company's acquisition of Morrisville's Care Management Technologies, its first deal in analytics. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the business profile, which is of Amadeo's Italian Restaurant. The headline, Raleigh icon thriving after rough few years. And this article was written by Amanda Hoyle. There's barely an inch of wall or ceiling space at the original Amadeo's Italian Restaurant on Western Boulevard in Raleigh that's not covered by some sort of sports memorabilia for NC State University. Founder Dick Amadeo DeAngelis was a star football player for the Wolfpack in the late 1950s. After finishing school, he and his wife Betty opened an Italian-style deli that could seat 12 people near campus. Amadeo's has since grown and can now seat close to 200 people. Former coaches Chuck Amato and Herb Sendek used to host radio shows from Amadeo's. The restaurant even briefly employed North Carolina comedian Zach Galifianakis before he dropped out of school and moved to Hollywood. A photograph on the wall at Amadeo's of Galifianakis in a movie scene handcuffed to The Hangover, co-star Bradley Cooper reads, "Amadeo's, thanks for employing me and all the free water. I think I left my apron there. I will come by on Tuesday to pick it up." No word whether Galifianakis followed up on that promise. But just a few years back, the restaurant was on the brink of failure. DeAngelis Brothers Incorporated filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in 2008, listing nearly $385,000 in debts and liabilities and only about $83,000 in assets. Lunch and dinner crowds were just as steady as ever, says Jill DeAngelis Parker, one of four siblings who took a piece of the ownership when Amadeo DeAngelis, 81, retired in 2007. All of the DeAngelis children and some of their spouses had been employed by the restaurant for many years, and the financial burden of supporting all the family was taking its toll on the restaurant's profits. "Dad ran this restaurant with his heart," Parker says, "and he made sure everybody was fed. The kids were fed. But I tell some of the kids that work here, they get upset that they have to pay for a paper cup. Well, that costs our company money, and we have to stay in business. I saw when things were not good." The restaurant was within days of not making payroll when David Harris, a founder of the Remington Grill restaurant chain in Cary, was having dinner at Amadeo's and found out about the family's plight. Harris, along with business partner Rodney Bird and their spouses, pooled enough funds to buy the restaurant's assets, remodel the kitchen, and put the restaurant back on solid footing again. Shortly thereafter, Jill Parker and her husband Dave bought back a 24% ownership in the restaurant and remain committed partners. Jill Parker oversees the restaurant's catering business like she has for years, and Dave helps curate the memorabilia. "David Harris runs this place with both his heart and his head," Dave Parker says. "The handwriting was on the wall. These guys, David and Rodney, they saved this business. We wouldn't be here today if it weren't for them." Harris says he sold some shares in the business to raise the money he needed, but the changeover had its challenges. "Early on, there were a lot of people who didn't know what happened. They thought I stole it from Amadeo and didn't even know Amadeo had already given it to his kids. So there was a lot of anger toward me." The kitchen and dining rooms also needed about $250,000 in renovation work, and the restaurant was to shut down for a few weeks. Harris also discovered that there were also never any written recipes for the plates that kept Amadeo's regular crowds coming back. "I brought in a guy who was a chef who wanted to change a lot of stuff, and I thought it was a good idea at the time, but we didn't do that long," he says. They eventually figured out the recipes that Jill Parker says are now pretty close to the same way her dad used to make it. Revenues have also steadily grown from about $980,000 that first year Harris took over the restaurant to close to $1.75 million in gross sales in 2016. DeAngelis had also always rented his restaurant space on Western Boulevard, and Harris in December 2015 put together an investor group to buy the 11,354 square foot retail center for $2.3 million. We had some shaky years. It's been a process, Harris says, but it's always cool seeing the people who come in here. This place is an institution. And along with this article, there's a box marked Closer Look. Company, Amadeo's Italian Restaurant. Location, 3905 Western Boulevard, Raleigh. Founded 1963. Top executives, owners, David and Virginia Harris, Rodney and Allison Bird, and Dave and Jill Parker. Employees, 40. Revenue, $1.75 million. And now we'll turn to some news from around the state. Triad textile firm investing $25 million in design center. Alamance County textile giant Glen Raven is now in the process of a more than $25 million project to convert a vacant 100,000 square foot facility near the company's headquarters into a world-class design center. Glen Raven CEO Alan Grant Jr. told the Triad Business Journal that Greensboro-based Samet Corporation is the contractor for the design center project, which began 9 months ago and whose first phase should be done by the end of the year. Sow and McCown of Brooklyn, New York is the project's architect, he said. We are now converting the first plant that my grandfather built in 1900 across the street into a new design center, Gant said. It was vacant and not being used. We wanted to save the building, so that is what we're doing. Gant said Glen Raven expects the price tag on the design center project to be in excess of $25 million. It will house Glen Raven's custom fabrics division, along with operations such as business development, design, and marketing. When the facility opens, Glen Raven will move about 150 employees from the company's corporate offices, which currently houses a small design center, Gant said. A larger facility will provide Glen Raven with more room to discuss designs with furniture market customers and showcase company brands such as Sunbrella, an outdoor fabrics line. Glen Raven has a total of about 3,000 employees worldwide, approximately 400 of whom work in the Triad, Gant said. NASCAR faces big challenge with loss of Dale Earnhardt Jr. Count the imminent retirement of Dale Earnhardt Jr. as another challenge for the business of stock car racing. NASCAR's most popular driver announced April 25 he will leave the sport after this season. Earnhardt, 42, has long been the most popular driver in NASCAR. His father, the late Dale Earnhardt Sr., helped push NASCAR into a decade-long boom. But NASCAR has endured a steady drop in fan interest in the past decade. TV ratings have fallen by nearly half since a peak of 8.5 million people per race in 2005. Last season, an average of 4.6 million people watched the races on TV. Attendance losses, too, have been steep. Charlotte Motor Speedway and other tracks have torn out tens of thousands of seats to cope with slumping ticket sales. NASCAR's working-class audience absorbed a series of economic blows while younger, more casual fans stayed away or never took an interest. Former hotel in Uptown Charlotte vacant for 3 years. As a steering committee gears up to lead a development of two city blocks in Uptown Charlotte, some have been surprised to find that the Hall House on North Tryon Street has no residents. The Hall House, listed on the National Register of Historic Places, opened in 1940 as the Behringer Hotel. The 12-story red brick building at 426 North Tryon Street was an upscale hotel designed in the Art Deco style popular at the time. It was acquired by the Charlotte Housing Authority in 1981 and converted into public housing. During presentations about a public-private redevelopment to Mecklenburg County Commissioners in March and City Council members on April 24, some expressed concerns the project would displace low-income residents. But Fulton Meacham, president and CEO of the Charlotte Housing Authority, said no residents would be displaced because nobody is living in the Hall House. He said the building has been empty for about 3 years. A spokesman for CHA said the Hall House was deemed obsolete in 2009 because it needed substantial renovations. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the People on the Move page, and the spotlight is on Irina Kristanovic, Economic Development Director for the town of Holly Springs. Irina Kristanovic joined the economic development team with the town of Holly Springs 16 years ago as a coordinator. Now she's calling the shots in the department. Kristanovic served under the tutelage of Jenny Mizell, the town's longtime economic development director, until Mizell's retirement from the post in July 2016. After a brief stint in an interim director role and a competitive search process, Kristanovic was named director at the end of March. Her primary responsibilities include industrial and commercial recruitment, retention and expansion of existing businesses, promotion of entrepreneurship, downtown development, and special projects. Kristanovic has big plans for the growth of the town, now with a population of about 35,000. She's touting the town's certified site status on more than 350 acres for industrial development. "We are ready to work with another company on the scale of Sequoias, the town's largest employer," she says. Kristanovic also points to the growth Holly Springs has seen in the number of medical offices, including UNC's Rex campus expansion at the intersection of NC 55 and Avent Ferry Road, and its town council-approved plans for a three-story Duke Health medical office building on NC 55. Downtown development is also a big focus, Kristanovic says, adding that her office manages a downtown development investment program that allows assistance with infrastructure costs and development fee reductions. "What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? The investment of time and effort that is required in the process of recruiting new businesses to town. That investment occurs without any guarantee of success, and some factors are beyond our control." "What are some of your major goals for your position?" "Major goals include bringing more industries and jobs to Holly Springs." And we will stop there as we're running out of time for today for the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.